from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. Welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support from listeners like you. And from the Palladium at the Center for the Performing Arts, opening in January 2011.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Sharon Gamble. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buscelli Wallerap Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Travis DiNicola. Today I'll find out how the IU Department of Ophthalmology looks at art.
I'll chat with photographer Dennis Ryan Kelly Jr. about his new show, Holy Lands, Journeys of a Pilgrim.
And I'll get to talk about butter and pecan pies with Chef Paula Dean. And we'll have our arts calendar we call What'll We Do?
All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. Indiana artists have an opportunity to submit artwork to be considered for display in the Eugene and Marilyn Glick Eye Institute, scheduled for completion in spring of 2011. The Glick Eye Institute, currently under construction on the IU School of Medicine campus at IUPUI, will be home to the Department of Ophthalmology. Travis DiNicola spoke with Mary Ann Glick, daughter of Eugene and Marilyn Glick, and with Jeff Rothenberg, MD, chairman of the Glick Eye Institute Art Committee, and an associate professor of clinical obstetrics and gynecology at the IU School of Medicine.
Let's start with talking a bit about what the Glick Eye Institute is, Marianne. I know that this is certainly something that your parents are very passionate about.
Yeah.
And excited about. It's what motivated your parents to do this?
My mother has had a real passion for preventing blindness for over 30 years. She founded a group called People of Vision, which was the auxiliary to the Indiana Society to Prevent Blindness.
Mm-hmm.
And although at that time, other than that she'd worn glasses from the time she was a little girl, there had not been any real eye problems in the family. She feels that vision is so important. Art has been so important to her.
Mm-hmm.
And so people being able to see and see well has been a passion of hers. And interestingly enough, since they made the gift, she has lost a significant part of her sight.
Oh, really? I'm sorry
so
to hear
that.
So
now it's even more important to her that that research goes on and,
mm-hmm.
and hopefully cures from some eye diseases can be found there.
Dr. Rothenberg, what does it mean for the IU School of Medicine to have the Glick Eye Institute on the campus?
Well, this is the newest research institute that will be on our campus. It's going to be 80,000 square feet, which quadruples the space that they have right now. And really, it will be the premier center in the United States for not just the treatment of eye diseases in patients, but also for research. And really, when we look at how best to treat disease, it's not just to treat individuals, it's to treat the future. So I think that's really the key of this building. It's the research that's going to go on to prevent this from happening to people in the future.
Now, you are yourself, you're not a doctor of optometry or ophthalmology?
No, I'm actually an obstetrician gynecologist.
So it's going to be very interesting for you to be working at the Eye Institute.
Well, I won't actually be working there. I'm
no.
the head or chair of the art committee for this building, which I think happened because I have a real interest in the arts and healing in general. And I also happen to be close friends with Marianne and Marilyn Glick and Jean. And I think those two things in combination kind of helped me land this spot.
And you're also a glass artist yourself.
I am a glass artist myself.
That's so fantastic, actually.
Thanks.
Yeah, yeah. And now, do you do work at the Indianapolis Arts Center? Or?
Yes, most of mm-hmm. the work I do at the Indianapolis Arts Center. And I do some work also at Greg Thompson's studio on the... I guess it's the east side of town, and his studio actually did a whole bunch of work for the cultural trail,
mm-hmm.
For the Peace Walk, also for the Glicks. So there's
right.
a lot of ties in and personal connections on all sides.
Yes.
Now, with the Institute, I understand that the design incorporates a lot of glass into the building itself that's being designed, that was designed by Ratio Architects.
Yes.
And that's really to reflect, I mean, not just sort of the idea of seeing through something, but also, in part, your own mother's interest in,
yes,
in glass.
Yes, it is. They've done a fabulous job of having several different types and designs of glass incorporated
mm-hmm.
into one of the main walls that can be seen both from the inside and outside, and will really, depending on where you're standing or where the sun is, will give different reflections throughout the day. It should be a fascinating thing to take a look at. When we looked at it during the construction tour, already it wasn't even done, and mm-hmm. it really was beautiful from both the inside and out.
That's very exciting. And now some of the glass is supposed to be more of an amber or yellow color.
Yes, the amber color is brightness, happiness, joy. Mm-hmm. There's some grays, there's some blues, there's some yellows.
Well, it sounds like, I mean, obviously the building itself is going to be a beautiful space to look at, and obviously you also want to have beautiful things to look at inside, which is a really interesting, I mean, in some ways it makes perfect sense for an Eye Institute, that people are going to be wanting to look at things, but of course people who are coming to the Eye Institute in many cases are going to be struggling with their vision.
Yes.
It sounds like the idea is once they get healed and taken care of, they can see great things.
Absolutely.
Well, I would say, though, the request for proposal that we have out for mm-hmm. Artists to put artwork in the building is not just for glass. And there's a lot of different things that people could conceive of.
Well, let's talk about that specifically, the proposal. I know you're looking for artists, local artists or with ties to Indiana, and the proposal is out there right now, and you're accepting applications through the 15th. Tell me more specifically about this. It can be for new work, existing work, not just glass, as you said.
So, right, I'll start, and obviously glass would just be one thing that we would accept. The whole theme has to be that something in the piece of artwork should speak to people about vision, light, reflection, perspective. So in some way, shape, or form, it should have something to do with vision. I would say we're even looking for multimedia things, which could really mm-hmm. help somebody who has a problem with vision. Monet painted his water lilies, which some people would say is his masterpiece, mm-hmm. toward the end of his life when he was near blind. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, just because people are vision impaired doesn't mean that mm-hmm. they can't do great things and enjoy great art. And so this is really an opportunity for artists in the community to make an impact with regards to this theme.
Yes. And I think that whether it's painting or sculpture, mm-hmm. or glass, we are hoping that there are some things that are in there that will have a textural quality, mm-hmm. so even people who aren't able to see well may be able to touch the piece and enjoy it that way as well.
Well, I was wondering about that, because there's been some really interesting work done in what are often called, you know, sensory gardens, mm-hmm. or
sure.
exhibits, yes. Both with very tactile art, you know, for that you're allowed to touch, in fact encouraged to, or even in some cases smell or hear,
yes.
or what have you. So that would be something you'd consider also possibly.
Oh, absolutely. For sure. Yeah, nothing's off the table.
Yeah. Now, is there a specific space in the Glick Eye Institute that the work will be exhibited in, or is it going to be incorporated throughout the whole building?
It'll be throughout the whole building. Mm-hmm. There are several spaces available for art, mm-hmm. and so there will be many different opportunities for different size pieces and different mediums.
I would say a very exciting thing is that the internationally known Hoosier sculptor, Don mm-hmm. Gummer, mm-hmm. Is going to do a piece, or is actually doing a piece for the outside of the building, which really give the building some panache as well. I think, you know, a kind of international feel. So that will draw people in even from the outside. And there's a lot of Hoosier connections that he has to...
Right. Well, he was a student at Herod, and he's got the great piece that's just south of downtown, near sort of the Lilly Ferris campus area.
Right, and there's a family history of vision, and mm-hmm. so I think that there's a lot of reasons why it makes sense. I understand he's also doing a second piece for Bloomington, mm-hmm. And so, you know, Indiana in short order will have a nice collection of mm-hmm. you know, one of the most famous living sculptors today, you know, here in our midst.
So the committee that decides what artwork gets included, the two of you, I'm assuming, anyone else, or how does that all going to work?
Well, we actually have quite a large committee. Mm-hmm. There's probably about eight of us on the
yes.
committee total. And there's no one person who mm-hmm. who runs everything. I think that even Lou Cantor, who's the chair of the ophthalmology department, who's officially not on the committee, will probably have a voice in this, or should.
I think so.
Because really he has shepherded this through the whole way. And I think that we'll probably even have to elicit Marianne's mother and ask mm-hmm. what she likes as well, since she's really been such an integral part of this whole project.
Well, sure, of course. Is there anything, you know, I know you haven't had a chance, you know, proposals are coming in, submissions are still coming in, of course, but, you know, as you two have looked at work perhaps at other museums or other even eye institutes, as far as work that you've seen that you think, wow, that'd be something great to have here, or work that you're sort of hoping to see that artists will submit to be included?
You know, it's interesting. I was at the University of Indianapolis earlier today and saw a sculpture outside their library that was done by a Indiana artist. I believe her last name is Pearson, which is phenomenal. And to me, looked like something that it's both steel and glass. And it really looked like something that had great vision in the creation, and I was inspired. I got chills just looking at it. It really was motivational. So I'm hoping that perhaps she will submit something.
Excellent.
And I guess I would add, we know from previous research that when hospitals and clinics incorporate landscapes and soothing images, that it really can have a direct physiologic effect on patients, and they heal faster. And so I would hope that any of the art that's submitted that we accept has that same quality and feel, that people see it. And, you know, art can often be shocking. I think that we're not looking for that type of art in this space. We really want things that are healing and soothing, as opposed to something that really kind of shocks and scares you.
Right.
So it's a different type of art.
Of course. Yeah.
Skeletons probably are not going to be a big theme.
Oh. They don't have eyes.
Now, the building will be, construction finishes up this spring. When do you anticipate an opening? And when you do that, will the public be able to see the art that's on display?
Absolutely. The opening is going to be on August 19th at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And the community will be invited in on August 20th and can come in any time after that to take a look at the art.
Excellent. Well, I look forward to seeing all of the art at the Glick Eye Institute. Thank you both for coming into Art of the Matter today.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Travis DiNicola with Marianne Glick and Dr. Jeff Rothenberg of the Glick Eye Institute at the IU School of Medicine. If you are an artist interested in submitting your work to be included in the Glick Eye Institute, visit glickeyeinstituteart.org for more information. glickeyeinstituteart.org. The deadline is January 15th. You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio.
Dennis Ryan Kelly Jr. saw the world through a camera lens from an early age. In his newest exhibition, On View at the JCC, he sought out people of prayer and places of special holiness. Sharon Gamble invited Dennis to our studios to learn about the travels behind Holy Lands, Journeys of a Pilgrim Artist.
I grew up here in Indianapolis, and I feel like I've been an explorer since I was a boy, when I used to explore at the pond over by Marion College, where my dad taught, and caught a lot of frogs and snakes and things as a boy. So I feel like I've been out seeking things for a long time. When I was in high school, I took up photography and took it up pretty avidly, and I got a macro lens, and so I started exploring things really close up, and that was a whole remarkable field of exploring. And then
why were you attracted to that?
When you look at things at a real close range, they really take on a whole different proportion, and there's all kinds of remarkable things. The eye of a frog, when you're close up to it, is just it's a jewel-like and quite marvelous. So it was an opportunity to give myself a fresh perspective on the world. You know, at that point I was 15, 16 years old, and I was used to seeing the things the way we normally do. But then when I got a macro lens, I got it because I was commissioned, actually, to photograph close-up things for
as a teenager?
Yeah, by a teacher. And the teacher needed to illustrate an article he was writing. And so he needed to do this, and so I said, well, we really ought to buy a macro lens, and I got him to help me buy a macro lens.
What an operator. Good
it
for
was,
you.
It was brilliant. It was, I'm really grateful. Yeah.
Was
so,
this a biology teacher?
Yeah, Dr. Jefferson actually was a history teacher. He taught world history, and I can't actually tell you what we photographed at the time, but the consequence was I got a macro, and that opened up a whole new field of vision. Okay, so I'm aware that you asked me how I started traveling abroad, and so I haven't gotten there yet, but I feel like that volition was kindled early on through things like that.
Absolutely. When you were looking at that detail, were you thinking, let's see if you remember this even, or can identify this, were you thinking about aesthetics, or were you thinking about maybe the biology behind, let's say, that frog's eye?
Thank you for the question. And the answer is definitely both. And, you know, when I was 15, I was thinking about beauty and what I thought looked cool. I probably hadn't learned the word aesthetics yet.
Yeah.
Though I was a philosophy minor, and I had a whole class in aesthetics later in my career. But at that time, I was digging the biology. I was actually taking every science class at Ritter High School, and advanced biology was one of my favorite classes. And so that was an aspect. You know, I was definitely considering the biology, you know, how these marvelous creatures worked. And I was a really good dissector, for instance. You know, we did frog dissection, and I detailed it, you know. I wasn't going to, like, kill and cut up a frog without doing it with care, you know. And I really did it and revealed a lot of fine structures. And likewise with the shark. And I revealed all the cranial nerves of the shark and followed out the nervous system throughout the animal. And I could be fascinated. So I have a scientific inclination, and in fact, I was a biology major when I went to Wabash College. That's the way I started at Wabash. And I really like that foundation, and I feel like I'm still a science enthusiast, you know. And ultimately, I graduated as a religion major and a philosophy minor, and I had as many credits in art as in those. But I feel like I'm keeping all of those inquiries alive as I work as a photographer.
Sure.
Okay, so after I graduated college, I had been a religion major, and so I'd been studying religions of the world. And I saw on the notice board there at Wabash the opportunity to study abroad and have a working permit, and so be able to support yourself. So that was a good opportunity, and Ireland was one of the places one could go. So I elected to go to Ireland because
I'm Irish.
I'm Dennis Ryan Kelly, Jr., you know. So it's a very Irish-seeming name, and about half of my family came from there and about half from Germany. And so they speak English over there, which made it more accessible to me. And I had a wonderful time exploring in Ireland. And the hospitality was marvelous, and I could tell you all kinds of stories about Ireland, but that was my first country, and I spent 4.5 months in Ireland, Northern Ireland, Scotland, and England, mainly in the Free State of Ireland, as they called it, the Republic of Ireland. But I was in Northern Ireland a fair amount, too. So I was talking to another friend this morning and said that, you know, I've been in war zone, actually, a number of times, not literally amongst bullets flying, but in areas that were suffering civil war often. So Northern Ireland was one of those, and it was very poignant and intense to be there. And I've been in Peru and Guatemala also during times of conflict, and it built my sense of the need to pray. You know, I put myself in these remarkable situations all by myself, but I must say I learned that notion from the ancient Hebrews early on that God is everywhere. Okay, so I gave my prayers, you know, in Northern Ireland and in Lima, Peru, and in all these other places, and then I proceeded with hopefulness and confidence and friendliness and met great hospitality in all these places where I knew no one going in. Do you know what I mean? So that
is
initial
experience. Is it a benefit is it an asset or a liability to have camera gear with you when you go someplace where you know no one?
It's the only way I've done it so I can't actually. I have
fair.
No experimental evidence of the contrary, practically. So I keep coping. I recently read a thing. One of my students, I'm teaching at the Art Institute these days part time here in Indianapolis, and one of my students brought in a quote from Jody Cobb, who's a very fine National Geographic photojournalist, and she said that she thinks it's kind of inappropriate to come in acting like you're just being friendly to people and then pull out a camera. She said it's much more upfront and honest to just come in with your camera visible and you know, say that you're interested in them and that you want to do a story and photograph. And I think that that's actually pretty much what I have done in my experience too. So I've been pretty upfront about it, and not literally always coming in, you know, with my camera out, but I made it pretty clear early on that that was part of what I was doing, was photographing, because I wanted to show people back home what it was like out here in northwest Guatemala,
mm-hmm.
you know, where we still have people wearing traditional clothes that they've hand woven. You know, I wanted the people there to know that that was my intention, that I wanted to share some of their story, and that I had genuine interest and respect, and which was very much the case. And I think that that's part of the reason people have treated me kindly in return, is that they could see that I genuinely was interested in how they lived.
Traditionally, we think of a pilgrimage to the Holy Land as being one particular geographic place.
Yes.
But your pilgrimages are everywhere.
Right. And I must tell you a brief story, if I may, please. When the pastor of our church, Father Paul Cutter, announced from the podium at St. Monica that he was going to be guiding a tour or escorting a tour to the Holy Land.
Mm-hmm.
He was talking about going to Israel and the famous places, you know, Jerusalem, Bethlehem, all these such. And I was very excited about it. I thought it sounded terrific. I love Father Paul. I'm always interested here. And yet I knew I had been to Japan just a little bit earlier in my life, a year or two earlier. And I thought Mary Ann, my wife, should go on this pilgrimage. And so after Mass, that's what I said. I said, you know, Marianne, I think this is a great opportunity. Why don't you go? And she said, Dennis, that area does not call to me like it does to you. And I don't want to contribute to the belief that that is a uniquely holy site worth fighting over. Okay, so there's enough conflict over that ground. And for me, she said, Ireland is more appealing. That's like my ancestral place. That's where I'm excited to be. And yet, she said, Dennis, I know you want to go. So you go. Okay. And so I had to mull over her philosophical position, because it's really strong. You know, it's a strong theological position to say, well, in fact, God is everywhere in the whole universe. You know, and so holiness can be wherever one is, okay, in awareness of this presence, okay? And so that's a very strong position. And yet, there are historical events that we associate with places. And
sure.
So it's marvelous to go to the Sea of Galilee,
mm-hmm.
and see that territory and know that it looks pretty much like it looked throughout all the ages. You know, it's a marvelous thing. It's not real highly developed, the Sea of Galilee, especially along that north shore where Capernaum is and the Mount of the Beatitudes. It's very organic. It's really quite remarkable to step into that space and know that it looked pretty much just like this.
You, this being radio, unfortunately we don't have the advantage of the visual, but you did bring in a photograph to show me as an example, and it's where it is believed the Sermon on the Mount happened. And I want you to describe the technique, because it's a very large photograph, or right. a series of photographs, actually, right?
I think in this case there are seven individual images that I took with the pre-visualization of compositing into a panorama. And so I put my little mini tripod onto one of the boulders there along the Sea of Galilee, and I set it for a 2-second exposure, because the sun had already set. We were in twilight, and so there was this beautiful, sublime glow that was warm over all these big hunks of boulders that are lava rock. And I pivoted the camera around with a little bubble level on top so I could keep track of the horizon, and that allowed me to form a panorama that goes all the way around. In fact, the two ends overlap a little bit. And then when I brought it home, I was able to layer it together in Photoshop. And I prefer to keep the edges of pictures visible. So you can see that there are unique frames that make up this panorama. Mm-hmm. And I find that that actually helps me in appreciating it. You can kind of feel that there was time that elapsed in the making of it. And so I think it has a really good feel to it. And it's 7 feet wide. In this version, it's 7 feet wide and about 12 or 14 inches tall. And in the version that's hanging, it's got, I actually acted as a scribe and I wrote out the Sermon on the Mount, because that's the Beatitudes. That's like, blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the land. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall see God. I may be misquoting it, but it's those great virtuous statements that Jesus made that told us how to be blessed. So I wrote them out with a silver pen along the bottom of that canvas, and it hangs like a scroll with wooden pieces top and bottom. Hmm. So the whole exhibit is suspended like that. So it has resonance with the Torah, which is done on scrolls.
Right.
It also has resonance with Chinese and Japanese silk paintings that hang like scrolls.
And there's a great sense in this photograph that 2,000 years have not passed, that time has stood still in this place.
Well, all right, that's very, very valuable. I agree with you. It does seem as
it's undeveloped. It's rugged. It's kind of forlorn.
That's part of the deep twilight. I added a brand new piece in the current rendition of this show. Sharon, this is the 7th rendition of this exhibition, Holy Lands, Journeys of a Pilgrim Artist. It keeps growing, this show, and refining elements keep adding. And for the current version of the Jewish Community Center, I think that there are 5 new pieces, and several of them have multiple images. One of them has 7 images that make a 12-foot-wide piece. And one of the new pieces is from along the Sea of Galilee. Later, after I had already done this whole panorama, I went closer down to the water, and I could see across the water to the little village of Tiberias, which goes back at least 2,000 years. And it was a really important village for the Jewish community after Jerusalem was destroyed by the Romans in 70 AD. That little town of Tiberias was a very important town, and you can see it. And the twilight is so deep that the exposure was 20 seconds long in order to get enough of the light that was remaining in the sky to make that exposure. Appreciate what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And that one has a really special feel to it, too. You can just feel the depth of the twilight. There's something quite marvelous about that. So as I explained to my students, one of the tools we have as photographers is the quality of light. And it's something that we have to watch for while we're out photographing, and it's also something that we can plan on. You know, when you're photographing in deep twilight, there's a different quality to the light, and it reveals something different in the photograph. Do you appreciate what I'm saying?
The next time you publish all of your works in a big coffee table book, I think it should be called Progressive Revelation.
Ooh.
Not just because of the technique you've just described in capturing the light, but because of the theological implications. Because this is a sense of what you're capturing, that God, he, she, it reveals himself in whatever way a particular people can appreciate the concept at different times at different parts of the world.
Right, right. And I'm convinced that God, he, she, it was revealing God's self to the Inca and to the Maya and the old Druid era Celts and the Buddhists and the people all around the world throughout time. Okay, so I'm interested by the way spirituality has developed in these sundry different places. And, of course, I come into it with a fairly idealized notion of all these spiritualities. And then I hope to gain an appreciation by actually meeting the people, seeing the places, see how their worship happens. And that's part of my ongoing progression of revelation for myself. And, yeah, I like your new title. In fact, I was ruminating on that today. I don't want people to be confused by the title of my exhibit. I have some concern that when people see Holy Lands, Journeys of a Pilgrim Artist, that they're going to imagine some dude off the Mayflower, you know, as the pilgrim. You know, it's like, oh, is this like, you know, understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But it actually is a word, and it means a person who seeks and seeks out God. And holiness. Yeah, I also want people to grasp that this is not a preachy exhibit. It's an opportunity to revel in beauty at these sites that are sacred to people from many different traditions. It's all from my perspective, I agree. I mean, that's inevitable. And I come at it as a Catholic Christian, and yet I'm a fairly broadly educated person and a very broadly respectful person. And so I think that you'll find that I give the Mayan Temple of Tikal beautiful light, beautiful composition, and it's a fine image. And the way that the jungle surrounds that temple, and if you listen to the audio accompaniment, you know, this is a multimedia show with CD players and headphones. If you listen to that track, you hear parrots fly through, squawking, and you hear all the vibrancy of the forest there. And I think that that clues people into spirituality that is different because of the place, you know? It's just kind of inevitable that the Mayans are going to come up with a different formulation on worship than the people who live in the desert.
Sharon Gamble with Dennis Ryan Kelly Jr. His exhibition, Holy Lands, Journeys of a Pilgrim Artist, includes large format G-Clay photographs and audio recordings. Dennis will be on hand at the JCC on December 16th from 5 to 8 p.m. to give you a personal tour. Find out more at denniskelly.com. That's D-E-N-I-S-K-E-L-L-Y. That's Dennis with one N. Again, D-E-N-I-S-K-E-L-L-Y.com.
Hey, Travis.
Yes, Sharon?
Are you in the mood for some holiday music?
You bet I am.
Boy, do we have lots of it going on around town, and we'll tell you about some of your opportunities on that calendar we call What Do We Do?
Let's start with some Tchaikovsky, a Nutcracker, that is.
All right.
If you don't mind.
Not at all.
Just because I think I actually said last week on our calendar events that there's enough Nutcrackers around in town to shake a nut at or something. But anyway, one going on this weekend, definitely worth checking out. Gregory Hancock Dance Theater is performing their version of the Nutcracker. If you like Gregory Hancock, then you know what they always do is they sort of take everything and give a fun contemporary theatrical twist to it. And that's certainly what's going to be going on at this production, which is taking place at the Pike Performing Arts Center this weekend with performances Saturday evening as well as Sunday afternoon that you can still check out at Pike Performing Arts Center with Gregory Hancock Dance Theater. But next weekend, there's two more Nutcrackers.
What?
Yes, two. At least that I'm aware of. I'm sure there's probably
a lot of sugar plum
dozen more within an hour's drive. But the Indianapolis School of Ballet, which they were on Art of the Matter just a couple weeks ago, theirs is taking place with their students at the Scottish Rite Cathedral on the 17th, 18th, and 19th. And then also the new Indiana Ballet Conservatory is performing the Nutcracker also, and they are featuring a star principal dancer from the Boston Ballet is performing with their Nutcracker, and that's going to be at the Madam Walker Theater downtown. In fact, they've got kind of a cool contest. If you go to their website at Indiana Ballet Conservatory, where you can sort of write a story, submit a story about a great tale of your own Christmas past, and you can win free tickets to that.
Oh, that's lovely.
Which is kind of neat. Yeah.
What a nice twist.
A lot of great different Nutcrackers going on.
Excellent. Speaking of music, very traditional for this time of year, a couple of opportunities in the very near future to hear Handel's Messiah this Saturday night at 7:30 and Sunday afternoon at 2:30 at Tabernacle Presbyterian Church, which is 34th and Central. You can hear soloists and choir from Tab and Fairview Presbyterian Church, as well as the Indianapolis Chamber Orchestra. Again, those performances are this Saturday at 7:30 and Sunday at 2:30 at Tabernacle Presbyterian Church. Beautiful sanctuary, great acoustics, good place to hear Messiah. You can find out more about those performances at icomusic.org, and you are on the path.
Well, if you just happen to miss that Messiah, or maybe you can't get enough of it, then you can check out the Indianapolis Symphony Orchestra. They are performing with the Indianapolis Symphonic Choir and soloists on December 18th at Clues Memorial Hall. They are performing Messiah as well. So that concert, again, at Clues, taking place at 8 p.m. on Saturday, December 18th.
You know, it's not really a secret anymore, but people who have been affiliated with Butler University are on the inside of the Rejoice, which is a a beloved tradition. It's in its 25th year now. It's a holiday concert that includes some of the most talented students in Butler's Jordan College of Fine Arts School of Music. And you can hear it this Saturday at 7:30. Admission is free, but you do need a ticket. You are required to have a ticket, and there's a limit of 4 tickets per person. So you can give a call over to Clues Memorial Hall and find out how to score your tickets.
And something you might want to check out, on Saturday afternoon, St. Vincent Carmel Hospital hosts the 22nd Annual Living Nativity, starting at 5 p.m. on Saturday the 11th, with performances again at 6 and 7 p.m. up at St. Vincent Carmel Hospital, and they are partnering with Carmel Community Players to present this Living Nativity. It's actually taking place in their parking lot in a heated tent. So I don't think they actually had a heated tent with the real nativity, but this makes it, you know, a little bit perhaps easier to enjoy.
Hey, you know who the narrator is for that?
No, I do not.
Moi?
Really?
Uh-huh.
Well, isn't that fun?
It was a lot of fun. I got to do it last year.
That's great, Sharon.
Hang out with the camels and the sheep and all the and the singers. It's a lot of fun.
Excellent. Well, that's
and yes, it is easy to spot if you're thinking, I don't know Carmel very well. You just go up Meridian, and when you bend around, you will see the tent, which is almost as big as St. Vincent Carmel Hospital itself. So it's great, and a very, very good thing for the family.
And you can see and say hello to Sharon Campbell, the narrator.
You sure can. And the camels. Not sure which is the draw there. Hey, speaking of holiday music, this is maybe a little bit more casual fare. On stage at the Athenaeum, Bob Harpin is back with his holiday show this year at Silver Bells Silver Screen, and it features performances inspired by the music of some of your favorite holiday movies. So that's going on through this weekend and next, and you can find out more at bobdirex.com. That's bobdirex.com for performance days and times.
You know, I don't know if any people remember from last weekend, Sharon, your interview with Bob, but you did quite the impression of Celine Dion. That I heard. There is actually no Celine Dion in the Silver Bell Silver Screen, but your singing there was quite amazing.
I hate that style of singing. Sorry.
Some singing that you perhaps enjoy more. The Athenaeum Pops Orchestra Holiday Concert. They're actually performing. It's a free concert. Now, if you're listening to us Saturday afternoon, it's just wrapping up right now, but it does start at 2 p.m. on Saturday if you're listening to us Friday night at the Indianapolis Arts Garden at Circle Center Mall. It is free. The Athenaeum Pops Orchestra. But just a reminder, too, that there's a lot of free concerts going on throughout the entire holiday season at the Indianapolis Arts Garden at the mall.
You know, it's hard to tell by the weather over the last few days, but it really technically isn't winter yet. Shocking, I know. Actually, the solstice is still almost 2 weeks away, but you can go to the IMA. They've been doing these great celebrations, including a winter solstice celebration. They're doing theirs this coming Thursday from 5:30 to 8:30 at Lily House and Madeline Elder Greenhouse. There'll be a bonfire. You can meet, direct quote from the press release, folks, you can meet wintry animals, create a constellation lantern. I have to go just to see what wintry animals will be there.
Hello, wintry animal.
And there'll be ice carvers as well. And did I mention, there's a bonfire, so you'll keep warm. And while you're there, you can also shop at the greenhouse for seasonal music or decorations or gifts for the gardener on your list. So that's, again, this coming Thursday, the 16th, 5:30 to 8:30, free on the grounds of the IMA Winter Solstice Celebration.
Yeah, and you know what? There's still time to check out the Andy Warhol Enterprises exhibit up the IMA. In fact, they do have some special holiday hours. I would recommend logging onto their website to find out, but they are having some extended hours throughout the holidays so that people can go in and make sure they get to see the Andy Warhol show before that closes up in January.
Absolutely. And if you're looking for something to do on New Year's Day, their Nourish Cafe will be open on New Year's Day with a special Bloody Mary bar, little hair of the dog kind of thing.
Last thing I've got is, you know, I kind of feel like Matt Soucy here talking about a movie.
What?
But this is kind of fun.
You're allowed.
Tron Legacy is opening in IMAX 3D with a special midnight showing on the evening of the 16th going into the 17th at 12:01 a.m. on December 17th at the IMAX.
And if you look up Geek, you'll see a picture of that. Don't email us.
And then it'll
all
be there
right.
for like regular
you.
Showing at the yeah. IMAX. Yeah, that'll be so cool though.
The ISO is doing its classical Christmas concert this year on the 11th, and it'll be at the Scottish Rite Cathedral Ballroom. Very beautiful setting, and English folk songs, Siegfried Eidl, and Bach's Christians Be Joyful from the Christmas Oratorio, and as they say, much, much more. You can go to the ISO's website to find out more about
that. That's always
that.
A lovely concert.
Mm-hmm.
And we will be back next week with more lovely concerts and nutcrackers.
And geeky things.
On that calendar we call
What Do We Do?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on wfyi.org.
To help individuals with disabilities by providing individualized training and services to increase independence and enhance their quality of life. And on January 15th, they're bringing celebrity chef Paula Deen to town. An Afternoon with Paula Deen, presented by Duke Energy, will take place at 2 o'clock at the Murat Theater at the Old National Center. Again, that's on January 15th. And Travis DiNicola spoke with Paula Deen by phone.
Hello, Travis. It's Paula.
Hi. How are you?
Well, I'm about sick, but other than that, I'm great.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
Well, it's just that time of year, you know?
It is. Well, you sound great. And
thank you, Travis.
We're really excited that you're coming to Indianapolis for the event in January with Sycamore Services.
Yes, yes, yes. It's going to benefit the disabled. That's great, because you love what you do to have a purpose.
Now, for an event like this, actually, you know what, let me start by just giving a little introduction to you, because I was just talking to a friend of mine and said that I was going to get a chance to talk with Paula Deen, and she was very excited. And she said, so my friend said, that's the lady from the South, the chef who uses all the butter, right?
That's how people know me.
They certainly know you for that.
The butter lady.
So I'm assuming you'll be cooking with lots of butter. What for an event like this, where you're on stage and talking and doing demonstrations, what can people expect?
Oh, my gosh. They can expect, Travis, not a whole bunch of cooking.
Yeah?
Oh, because, you know, I said if hopefully people come to see me to just sit back, forget about everything that irks them, and just have a good time for an hour and a half or however long it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I said if they are wanting to learn how to cook, they're not gonna learn in that short a time. I said they can turn on the TV. I know 3 times a day and watch me cook.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not every day that I get to be with them in person and interact with them and talk with them. So I will be doing some cooking. I'm going to be doing, naturally, the gooey butter cake.
Oh, yeah.
So you're right about the butter. And I'm going to be doing an herb-crusted pork tenderloin and the ladies' cheesy mac, our macaroni and cheese that everybody just seems to love so much at the restaurant.
Oh, that sounds good.
Yeah, so, well, yes, and you're right. There's butter.
Of course, everybody in Indiana is going to love the tenderloin.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes, 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 and it's great. You know, I'm partners with Smithfield,
mm-hmm.
And they are just truly the king of pork. I mean, they have some of the finest pork you'll ever put in your mouth. So I think everybody will love it. But like I said, it's my goal for everybody to just, like I said, forget everything that irks them and just sit back and laugh and have a good time.
Well, this will be a lot of fun. I mean, you know, a couple weeks into the new year.
People will not walk away with a Julia Child's culinary degree, I can tell you that. It's not possible.
No, it sounds like it'll be certainly entertaining, though.
Yes.
So let me ask you this. I mean, the event with Sycamore Services takes place after the new year, but we're airing this before before Christmas. Uh-huh. Everyone's thinking about what they're cooking for the holidays.
Yes.
So what's Paula Deen doing for the holidays?
Well, you know, Travis, I just had my family over for Thanksgiving, and it's always ham and turkey.
Mm-hmm.
But Christmas time, we're kind of burned out on turkey and ham, so I always do beef at Christmas time,
mm-hmm.
and I will have a ham along with that. But I'll do a tenderloin, a beef tenderloin,
okay.
or either a standing rib roast. I jump back and forth between those two cuts.
Let me.
And we'll have potatoes.
Oh yeah.
My husband makes the most wonderful shrimp stuffed potato every Christmas to go with our meal. So he'll be making those, and I'll have ambrosia, and oh my gosh, I'll have a load.
I'm sure the holidays are a pretty big time at your house. Do you have a lot of people coming over? Your sons and
well,
family
we usually have around 25 or 30.
Mm-hmm.
I think we had about 22 here Thanksgiving. So it'll probably be upwards of 30 people for Christmas.
Any recommendations you have for holiday hosts, Christmas hosts, as far as how to make a great dinner or put on a great event for the holidays?
Well, you know, I don't have any pride when it comes to asking people to bring something.
Uh-huh.
In fact, that's what I did last Christmas. My husband and I just did all the meats, and we ask everybody to just bring a side because, you know, there are some good cooks out there,
mm-hmm.
and they love to show off their dishes, too. So it's a time where kind of everybody can shine and take credit for the meal. So I said, I think I'm going to do that same thing again this year.
Mm-hmm.
Just ask everybody to bring a dish. My niece, Kari, makes the best brown rice and broccoli casserole that you've ever put in your mouth. So that will be her contribution. And like I said, then I'll just ask everybody else to fill in.
Well, that's a great way to bring everyone together and let
yes,
everyone be a part.
Yes, it is.
You know,
it is. And like I said, it gives everybody a chance to take a bow, you know.
Well, I'm going to ask you for some advice then while I've got you here on the phone.
Okay.
Because I just made some pecan pies.
And remember,
pies.
It's worth what you're paying for it.
Fair enough. So I've been playing around with different pecan pie recipes, and I've been mm-hmm. thinking about making a pecan pie for Christmas using some Grand Marnier. Have you ever done something like that? Or
well, I've got a bourbon pecan pie
yeah.
recipe.
Yeah.
And, it would be fine. A pecan pie is one of those things, Travis, that you about can't screw it up.
That's why I like making them.
Uh-huh. I mean, it's so, so simple.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they are... you know, about the only choices there is do you make it with dark K-Ro or light K-Ro?
Sure.
And then you can put anything you want to in it. I have got a pecan pie recipe that calls for Philadelphia cream cheese.
Really?
Yes, and I can't remember what I did with the recipe. It's probably on the website.
Okay.
It may be called a mystery pecan pie or I can't remember, but it's delicious. And like I said, it's got a layer of cream cheese in it.
I will take a look at that then.
Yum.
Yeah.
Try to find that.
That sounds great. Doesn't sound like it'll be a mystery too much longer then. That sounds great.
Well, I'm thinking I did it on my show or even in the magazine. Mm-hmm. I can't remember because I touch so much. If I did it on the show, then it will be there.
Is there something that you enjoy working on better, the show or the books? Or, I mean, it all comes together, obviously. But
yeah, it does. You know, I just love shooting my show
mm-hmm.
because it's just such a natural fit for me. And I love the team at Follow Production. Gordon Elliott, you know, is my producer.
Mm-hmm.
And I just adore Gordon. You know, he knows how to pull the best from you. And like I said, it's just so simple. I have heard that different people on Food Network, you know, just like have meltdowns while they're filming their show, but I don't feel that stress or anything.
When you're
I just love doing it.
When you're shooting a show for the Food Network, how long does that take, both the preparation beforehand and then the actual shooting? I mean, is it just in a day, or does it take longer?
We do two shows a day.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
We'll start rolling camera somewhere around 9, mm-hmm. between 9 and 10. It depends on if they're having trouble with me in makeup, you know, if my eyes are bothering me or something. Sometimes we'll run a little late. But we usually wrap by 7 at night.
That's a long day.
Yeah, but we roll butthole, you know, once we turn that camera on. Well, let me tell you, we just put up our tree in our kitchen last night,
mm-hmm.
and I found, I was up in the attic, and I thought I had misplaced it, and I just couldn't even hardly think about it, but I found the Christmas gift that my grandchild had given me in 08.
Mm-hmm.
And listen to it. It's one of those recordings. Listen. Listen to that.
That's
that
so
not
sweet.
The sweetest thing?
That is so sweet.
It said, "Merry Christmas, Kenny. I love you."
This has been a real pleasure chatting with you. I hope you feel better soon.
You're so welcome, Travis. And tell everybody I look forward to them getting out after the first of the year and coming and having a good time with us.
I will certainly do that. And you take care and have the best of holidays.
Thank you. You too, dear.
Okay.
Travis DiNicola with celebrity chef Paula Deen. You can see her at An Afternoon with Paula Deen, presented by Duke Energy, which benefits Sycamore Services. It'll take place at 2 p.m. on Saturday, January 15th at the Murat. The performance will include a cooking demonstration with Paula Deen being assisted by the chef from Turner's at the Canterbury and sous chefs from the Chef's Academy in Indianapolis. Ticket information is at sycamoreservices.com. Again, sycamoreservices.com. Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buselli Wallerab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
Please listen to The Art of the Matter again next Friday at 8 p.m. and Saturday at 4. I'll chat with the actor who plays the wizard in the touring production of Wicked that's coming to Indianapolis.
I'll talk with Mary Froh about artists and their dreams.
Plus, there's our arts calendar that we call
What'll
We Do?
So please listen next Friday at 8 and Saturday at 4 to The Art of the Matter here on WFYI for your information.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support from listeners like you and from the Palladium at the Center for the Performing Arts, opening in January 2011. The Art of the Matter. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's Art of the Matter was produced and edited by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter on 90.1 FM, Indianapolis.